Back in the 80s, my Aunt Kay was in her early 20s. This was before she married my uncle, and when she would drive long distances back and forth between her parents and my uncles to visit. It was a transitional period for them. He had just graduated, and she hadn't moved out yet to be with him. It was a long drive across several states, through the desert, which took her hours. This desolate highway would have stretches of road that lasted hundreds of miles, where you quite often wouldn't see another driver, let alone a gas station. So Aunt Kay set out and began one of these journeys. A couple of hours into the drive, she noticed a dark vehicle slowly catching up to her. She barely noticed as she continued to sing along with the radio until the vehicle got aggressively close. She turned off the music and looked into her rearview mirror, seeing the vehicle flash its brights and a hand pointing at her car and motioning to pull over. Alarmed, she quickly slowed and began to look for a good place to pull off the road to see what must be wrong with her car. The second she began to pull off the road, she said she felt and heard as clear as day, "Don't pull over." Then again, stronger, "Don't pull over." Call it God, intuition, or just a gut feeling, but a jolt of adrenaline and fear shot through Aunt Kay's body as she hit the gas and peeled back out into the highway. Heart pumping, she silently asked herself what the hell that was as she saw the vehicle peel out behind her. The dark vehicle continued to closely follow and motioning to her to pull over. Fear and confusion set in as she began to question what was going on. Why was the driver motioning for her to pull over? Was there something wrong with her car? And what the hell was that warning she felt? It would have been a severe situation if her car broke down out there, especially before cell phones, but she pressed on. Just as her resolve wavered and she started questioning if she truly did feel what she felt, she started slowing back down when the dark vehicle picked up speed. It entered into the oncoming traffic lane and came level with my aunt's car. The driver smiled, pointed, motioned, and mouthed the words, "Pull over," to my aunt. She said the second she looked into his eyes, she felt pure evil. She felt a horribly sick feeling in the pit of her stomach and again, heard the words in her head, "Don't pull over." She described him as looking scary and greasy and noticed he was missing a couple of teeth in his smile that she'll never forget. That sent chills through her. This quickly dispelled any thought she had of pulling over and she put the pedal to the metal to try to lose him. He chased after her. She slowed down, he slowed down. She sped up, he sped up. It got to the point that he began to try and push her off the road. Aunt Kay was to the point of tears as this creep continued to terrorize her alone, out in the middle of nowhere. Finally, after what felt like an eternity, she sees a couple of semis off in the distance. She felt if only she could get close or even get in between those trucks, she would be safe, so she took off. He continued to flash his lights, honk his horn, and try to hit her car until she got close enough to the trucks. As she got in between them, she saw the dark vehicle slow way down and eventually disappear from view. She stayed with the trucks for a couple of hours until she felt safe enough to pull over at a gas station and cry. Fast forward several years, my aunt and uncle are married. He's working at a law firm as a high-profile criminal prosecutor in Las Vegas. She's now a full-time mom of several young children. Since I've known my aunt, she's been obsessed with true crime. Dateline, 2020, and unsolved mysteries were always playing at their house. This day was no different. She was folding laundry in the kitchen while listening to the TV in the other room. The interviewer was talking about a man who was being interviewed on death row. As she paired another match of socks, she heard the man describe one of his tactics for procuring victims. According to him, he would wait along the side of a highway. A car would go by with a family, and he'd wait. Another car with a male driver would go by, and he'd wait. But every so often, a car would go by with a pretty woman driving alone. So he'd pull out behind them and follow them. He said he'd flash his brights, honk and motion for them to pull over. My aunt, now paralyzed, continued to listen. When they would eventually pull over, I would tell them to pop the hood and I'd be able to tell what was wrong with the car. They would, and I'd yank a couple wires. When the car wouldn't start, I'd tell them no problem that my buddy has a shop in the next town. I can give you a ride and he'll give you a fair deal. My aunt slowly moved to the living room. They'd get in. I'd assault them and kill them, bury them anywhere in the desert. When asked how many times he did this, he responded, "They'll never find all the bodies, I can't even count." And how many got away? Maybe two or three. My aunt stood alone, staring into the same toothless grin she saw that night on the highway. It was Henry Lee Lucas. It was a hot summer day. I'd gone for a hike and got seriously lost, which is another story. Suffice it to say that I had hiked through trackless wilderness for mile after mile, and even when I found a road, I was so far from a car, I didn't know which direction to go. Dead tired, exhausted, and still several miles back to the car. Finally, I was on the way home late in the afternoon, on a hot, sunny summer day after many hours lost in the mountains and woods. It was about 15 miles to home, and I live out in the country. As I started into the drive, I saw an overweight, out-of-shape fellow hitchhiking in the direction I was going. I saw that he had a long, hard walk in front of him, just like I had completed only 20 minutes ago. Of course, I felt sorry for the fellow having a similar ordeal as I just had, and so I stopped and motioned for him to get in. I did not realize my ordeals for the day were not over yet. As he opened the door, he gave me a look, and we exchanged a greeting as he squeezed into the front seat. He was going to a spot off of the highway, on the way to my house, and off we went, engaging in light conversation. I glanced down at his side, and I noticed he had a prosthetic arm, made of a hard, heavy ballistic plastic, with a metal hook for grasping instead of a hand. From the conversation, he was an out-of-work construction heavy equipment operator, whose house was undergoing a bank foreclosure. He was basically squatting illegally on his own property, probably hitching around during the day to avoid the sheriff evicting him and coming back in the evening to let himself into the basement. So basically, a homeless vagrant and a transient that still had a physical address. This didn't raise any red flags with me at the time, though maybe it should have. I have a repertoire of interesting stories I like to tell. I dusted one off and told him a yarn or two to pass the miles and be friendly, as it makes the ride easier. He listened politely, and I found he liked to talk a little bit himself. My tales must have encouraged him because he began to tell me a very strange tale of his own. He began to relate to me that years ago, during what he claimed was one of the worst blizzards of the century, in his words, a woman had a bad accident on the US route that went past his house. He said that she was badly injured from the accident and bleeding to death. His story continued, and he mentioned that the weather was so bad that the road was undrivable, but as a construction operator, he had a backhoe. He said that he loaded the injured woman into the bucket of the backhoe and drove her 30 miles through the freezing cold, in blizzard, to a major medical center and delivered her to the ER. That was a pretty odd tale, I thought. I am pretty street smart, having seen a lot of the world and some of the more dangerous places in it. I believe that he had changed up the story somewhat to protect the guilty. He wanted to share his story but disguise his role or what had really happened. In other words, I believe his story contained a kernel of truth, but he had changed a few details. I am pretty quick to spot inconsistencies and also can analyze just as quickly. It comes with the street smarts, I guess, another word for the survival instinct. What I think is true is that a woman who was fatally injured, perhaps someone who had come to his door for help. I thought that she died, and I think he used the bucket loader to bury the body. The why and wherefore I could not guess at, but I had immediately gotten that impression. I didn't have much time to think about it as the drive was coming to an end. It may seem weird to you that I came to that conclusion, but perhaps what follows will convince you. As he ended his story, we had come to the turn for his house. As I turned into the long driveway, he had just ended his story, now began to make improper propositions to me as to what he would like to have happen. I was a bit taken aback, but just simply told him politely that it was not my thing, and ended my conversation as we pulled up to his house, and he continued to insist. The problem was that he was not taking no for an answer. I realized that things were rapidly getting out of hand, but I am a cool customer when dealing with actual stress and danger. I like to think that I'm pretty hardcore, which discourages most potential malefactors, but not this guy, which shows just how dangerous he was. He wasn't getting out of the car, now that we were stopped, and he had his hard plastic arm, solid and heavy as a log, raised halfway between us, looking me straight in the eye and not saying anything. Having studied self-defense, I knew the deal. If I looked away or blinked, he would knock me out with the arm. He was formidable as well. He may have been fat, but he was a construction worker with large arms and muscles from a life of heavy work. The weight was all to his advantage in any struggle. I knew the deal though, and I always had a plan in case a hitchhiker proved to be dangerous. I had my seatbelt on, and he didn't. The plan was to floor the car into his house at about 60 and put him through the windshield. Even if I was injured or unconscious myself, hopefully he would be worse. The idea was that the noise of a high-speed crash would bring neighbors to find out what happened, and I would also blare the horn. But I could see that if he went through the trouble of knocking me out for the purpose of assaulting me, that likely I would never wake up again. Someone this dangerous was not going to leave a witness that could put him in jail for the rest of his life. Likely, he was a career criminal, and this was not his first rodeo. The other secret, learned from martial arts, is to never look away and hold the gaze. Read the intent, and then spontaneously block or deflect the initial attack. This guy could see from my eyes that he would have a real fight on his hands, that I was fully ready for a life or death combat. The situation ended when he opened the door and anticlimactically got out. I quickly backed out of the yard, spun the car around, giving him a departing glance, and headed out. Whew, I thought. That is the most dangerous motherfucker that I have ever encountered. I really should call the state police and tell them to keep an eye out on that scary bitch, because it'll only be a matter of time before he tries to kill somebody, and at least they'll have a warning about him on their files. But, I thought, the police often don't seem to take me seriously, and he didn't do anything other than pose a threat. No actual assault. So what can I do? The real reason was now that the situation was over, I just wanted to forget about it. It had been a very long day, after all. A police report would take up another hour of my dinner time, and I would have to deal with possibly skeptical or unhelpful authorities. In 2020 retrospect, I see now that was a mistake. About 10 years later, the property was the site of a very active crime scene. A woman from a nearby state had come to live at that house and had gone missing. I did not realize that his house was the site, till I drove by one day and saw a state police crime scene bus, about 5 cruisers and a police helicopter, and everything marked off with crime scene tape. And then I thought, oh my, I really should have let someone know, it might have prevented this. And I was lazy and concerned more with myself that day. The girl's body was later found in a local pond in a freezer that had come from that house. Dark stories of a couple exploiting a young homeless girl down on her luck emerged, and it seems other folks were involved as well. A crazy tale that I won't get into here, out of respect for the family. I drove by a couple of days later and the investigation was winding down, and only a cruiser or two were maintaining security. That is when I decided to call into the state police with a story about the backhoe that Captain Hook had told me. The next day, the crime scene was abuzz again. I suspect they were searching for other cadavers. Although the couple was never charged, they both remained in prison on other charges, the last I knew. The lesson for me was, see something, say something. I-25 female had an experience about 4 days ago that I haven't been able to shake. I was dog-sitting for my boyfriend while he was away on a backpacking trip. My boyfriend's home is in a semi-remote area at the bottom of a hill at the back of a few acres of property. He's right next to the highway, which has opposite to us, a small rural neighborhood. It's both very sketchy and very safe, meaning that the community is so close, but people frequently keep to themselves. And there are lots of abandoned, dilapidated homes right next to a very well-kept homes. A pretty typical countryside neighborhood, so I really didn't feel unsafe agreeing to watch my boyfriend's property and his dog, Hennessy. Hennessy is a 115-pound, jet-black American Bulldog, English Labrador mix. He's basically all muscle, and ever since my boyfriend and I began dating, he's become very protective of me and my dog, Lottie. Lottie is a 57-pound poodle mix. I'm a dog groomer, so she's usually done up in pretty silly haircuts, with bows and everything. All of this is to say that one of my dogs is very intimidating, and the other is not. Because of his strength, however, I cannot walk Hennessy and Lottie at the same time on my own, and so I usually walk Lottie alone, and then go back and get Hennessy to walk him alone. We do about 30 minutes of walking each, and I like to take Hennessy after Lottie at night, because I feel safer with him as it gets later. This is important, because that was the case about 4 nights ago. I was about 3/4 of the way through my walk with Lottie when I got this really weird feeling that I was being watched. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I looked around to see that about 30 feet or so back, there was a tall man in a hoodie standing next to an older rundown home. I instantly thought the hoodie was weird. I live in Northern California, and it's early August. It doesn't get colder than 87 degrees in the evening, especially when the sun was still setting, and it was at that time. I forced myself to brush it off, as I tend to be fairly paranoid due to my years of reading Let's Not Meet stories. As I kept walking, the sun kept setting, and the streets began to slowly get darker. I would glance back from time to time and notice that the man was keeping pace with me, not breaking that 30-odd foot distance. If I turned a corner, so did he. If I sped up, so did he. Finally, we reached the highway, and I crossed right before a car came speeding past, hoping that if the guy was following me, this would put some distance between him and myself, which it did. But that didn't stop him from continuing to follow me. I walked as fast as I could to the house, not wanting to turn around, but now being able to hear his footsteps on the gravel. At this point, Lottie had noticed him too and started to bark and growl. I forced her to keep moving and thankfully made it back inside the house, slamming and locking the door, hoping that was the end of it. Moments after I'd shut and locked the door, I felt someone trying to open it. The dogs heard this too and started barking because they always do when someone is at the door. There's no peephole on the door, but I can talk to whoever is on the other side. It's a pretty thin door. So I yelled out and asked who was there. Through the barking, I could hear a man's voice. "I love your dog. Can I meet her?" For some reason, the way he said it was so creepy. It was like there was nothing behind it. Kind of like he rehearsed the line or decided to say it beforehand. I yelled back, "No," and asked him to please go away. He paused for another second and then again said, "I love your dog. Can I meet her?" He starts trying the door handle again, this time pushing up against the door. By this point, Hennessy can tell something is wrong, and so can Lottie. The hair on the back of Hennessy's neck is standing up, and he's gnashing his teeth while growling. At that moment, I don't know what possessed me, but I threw Lottie into the bathroom behind me and grabbed Hennessy by the collar, keeping him close to the door with me. He's still barking and going crazy. I hear the man repeat that he wants to meet my dog, and I yelled out, "Leave." He paused and then slammed into my door. I saw the door move, and at that moment, I unlocked the door and opened it just wide enough that Hennessy could get about halfway out. He's going bonkers at this point. My hand is starting to hurt from holding him back. I can hear his teeth clacking, and he ferociously chomps toward the man. Well, this dude was not expecting Hennessy. He stumbled back, almost falling over, and cursed as he scrambled to stay off the ground. He didn't even look at me, instead booked it up the hill as fast as he could and out of sight. I managed to pull Hennessy back in and called the cops to tell him what had happened. I never got a good look at the guy, and they basically told me there wasn't anything I could really do. But they did take my statement, and they told me they'd contact me if anything ever came of it. I am so thankful for Hennessy. After all of that, I snuggled up with him and Lottie that night and cried because it all had hit me how terrifying it was. I literally went out the next day and bought him the biggest bone I could find from a pet store, nearly an hour away because he'd earned it. I also got Lottie something too. I don't know why this creep didn't get to him when I had two dogs barking inside, but my assumption is that he didn't really realize he was hearing two barks, or assume that if I had two dogs, they are both like my puffy poodle. That is to say, he wasn't afraid. I'm thankful that the guy didn't have a firearm, and looking back now, I probably should have just called the cops, kept my door closed. But I hope that maybe because he saw Hennessy, will now know not to come back and mess with us, because if he does, I'll let my big sweet boy rip his arm off.
This happened several years ago. While it may not be as scary as some of the stories here, it was definitely one of the most terrifying, bizarre encounters I've ever had. I'm 33 and I live in the rural Midwest. I was born and raised in my hometown, and with the exception of a few months of living with my father on the East Coast, I've lived here my entire life. I've become pretty acquainted with the majority of the back roads in my area. One such road is an old highway that no longer has the traffic of days prior to the construction of the interstate that runs through the town. It's a long and winding road that offers gorgeous scenic views during the day and a quiet escape from the city at night. Along this road is a small lot with no more than 10 parking spaces, 2 picnic tables, and a single trash can. It's easy to miss due to the heavily wooded area surrounding it and the majority of the rest of the drive to it. And due to its secluded nature, it had played host to a fair share of teenage debauchery. I myself spent many a Friday night smoking away with my friends there. Needless to say, there were a lot of good memories attached to this place, and over the years, it's become one of my favorite spots to venture to when I need peace or solidarity. One night, about 5 years ago, my girlfriend and I are going through a rough patch. We had a big fight due to having to work early in the morning and her deciding to have a party full of her loud and intoxicated friends. And things escalated and I stormed out of the house and started driving towards my favorite spot. As soon as I was out of the city limits, I promptly cranked my angriest metal music and sped down the road, chain-smoking my menthols in an effort to calm down until I finally found the turnoff for the spot. I was happy to find no other cars in the lot, meaning that I wouldn't awkwardly stumble upon two lovers engaged in, you know, the act. and I immediately jumped out of the car and sat down on one of the picnic tables, lit a cigarette, and stared at the stars. I sat there for several minutes until I decided to head back to the warmth of my car after hearing some rustling coming from the woods. Not wanting to become a chew toy for a coyote or an angry bobcat, I hustled back to my car and blared my music again, quickly forgetting the sounds that I had just heard. I decided to have one more smoke and then make my way home. I smoked it halfway through when, out of nowhere, I heard pounding coming from the passenger side of my car. I looked over to see a large hand beating against the window. I turned on my music that was still blasting, and as I did, I could hear a very angry voice shouting, "Open the door," while yanking on the door handle. Thankfully, my doors were locked, and after a few moments, the man disappeared from the passenger side, and then reappeared out of the driver's side window while screaming and cursing at me to open the door. He was now punching my window, trying to get in. I was frozen, in a mix of confusion and fear, but eventually snapped out of it and threw the car in reverse. It was so dark that I didn't get a good look at the guy, except for a split second he was illuminated by my headlights. He had a black zip-up hoodie with the hood up, a dark gray t-shirt and a ball cap. He was a stocky guy and had to be well over 6 feet as he towered over my Sonata. The only distinguishing feature that I could make out was a very large, dark beard. And I noped out of there real quick. I floored it across the parking lot and back towards the highway. And that's when I heard it. A loud bang that sounded like a gun. I slammed my foot on the pedal, took the first turn I could find, and once I was sure that no one was following me, I slowed down and realized that I was doing 90 on a gravel road. At the time, one of my best friends worked for a nearby gas station, so I made my way to tell him the whole story. We looked over my car thoroughly and found a couple of dents on top of the car and what looked like a boot print on my passenger door. We talked it over and ultimately decided to not call the police. It was a 20-minute drive to the location from the closest town.
Mr. Monopoly here! Monopoly is back at McDonald's! Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to...
get your bag!
2 ways to peel for a chance to...
get your bag!
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to...
get your bag!
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus plans November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
We were sure that the guy would most likely be gone by the time anyone got all the way out there. And yes, I realized that was probably ignorant of me in hindsight. I'm still baffled by this encounter. I don't know if this guy wanted to rob me, steal my car, or worse, but I'm glad that I made it home in one piece.